services industry, we have a very hard time kind of rewriting the past. I think there are a lot of bad seeds out there, and we still feel the effects of it today. Mm-hmm. But if we don't all come together and change that perception, it's only going to get harder, in my opinion.
Constructing your life is about much more than just building a bank account. Each week, join mindset coach Austin Linney as he interviews guests who are constructing their dream lives and impacting the world around them on a daily basis. If you're an entrepreneur or wanting to start a business, or you just want to hear motivating stories of how others have overcome the odds, you are in the right place. And now for your host, Austin Linney.
Guys, welcome back to Construct Your Life. This is Austin Linney in the house, and I got my man, Matty Marshall. How are you doing? Good, sir.
Doing well, man. How are you?
Doing good, man. I'm doing good, you know. We connected, and, you know, life is a weird thing, right? There's a... Because I'm going to send this to him afterwards. And I'm going to hate myself for saying this. I think Hugh Doshbach might be the coolest guy I've ever met in my life.
I tend to agree.
I didn't even know what a concierge was. And then I met him and I was like, well, whatever that job is, I want that job.
He had the coolest job too. And man, the perfect way to describe it. He's the coolest guy. Like in every scenario where we're working together, he was so like calm, cool, he had you eating out of the palm of his hand and he didn't even know it.
No, he hosted a party at his house and they used a canoe for champagne and oysters. And I was just like, we're on a different level right now. Like,
yep.
Yeah. And he's also, you know what? I can't blame him for it, but I got to tell you the story you've never heard before. So okay. Everybody that knows the podcast knows that I don't drink anymore. And so this might've been the night that put the nail in the coffin. Okay. Hugh was living in New Orleans at the time, and he said, "Hey, what are you doing Monday and Tuesday?" And I said, "Nothing." He goes, "You want to go to New Orleans?" I was like, "Sure." So we hit a flight. It was a direct flight. We left San Antonio at like 8:45. I think we landed in New Orleans at like 10:15. We were in a bar at 10:35. Like. Yep. I mean, it was like bam, bam, yeah, straight shot. That turned into like, I think I was hanging on till like 2. This is a true story, by the way. I said, "Ben, I gotta go, dude. I can't. Like, I got a flight back." And oh, that's what it was. I flew back the next day. Like, it was like bam, bam, right? So it was an early flight too. So he's like, "All right, let me go drop you off." So this is a true story. He's got a new place. It's in one of these neighborhoods. So he drops me off in front of the house. And this is, swear to God, true story. He found me 2.5 hours later, 3 miles the other direction. And the only way he found me is because my GPS on my phone.
I'm sharing it with him. But that's a smart move.
So he dropped me off in front of the house I was supposed to go in and sleep at. And he found me running in cowboy boots the other way. Right. Yeah. So then, we're supposed to get up. He's supposed to take me to the airport. I asked him about 16 times, like, "Dude, you're not going to be in a place to take me to the airport in the morning. Mm-hmm. Let me get an Uber." No, I got this. So wound up not waking up, had to take an Uber, and was sitting at the airport drinking Bloody Marys, just like hating my entire life. And then I got on the plane. And I sat next to this dude who was like insurance salesman going to Cancun. And he's like, "Hey, man, I got all these free drink tickets. Do you want any drinks?" I mean, you couldn't get, you know. So let's just say when I got home, I was doing some real self-evaluation.
Mm-hmm. As you said, coming back from New Orleans, especially visiting with Hugh, who knows every nook and cranny. That's the beauty of him, too. Mm-hmm. And why it was perfect, like the role was perfect when we worked together. And then I heard about it with Zoom New Orleans. It was so perfect for him because he will go investigate every nook and cranny. That dude knows. If you called him right now and said best breakfast tacos in San Antonio, yeah. I know his favorite. right? Where he has a taco named after him. But he can just right off the top of his head, best burger in town, right off the top of his head. And he walks into these places and everybody knows him. And I always go, did you eat six times a day? Like, how do all these places know you? You have to frequent these places a lot. Mm-hmm. There's only so many meals in a day.
Guys, let me take a minute to tell you about my buddies over at Lead Hub, Ben and Aaron, the best humans I know. Not only are they amazing at marketing for trade companies, but Ben started his HVAC company in his garage, sold it for multi-million dollars. So when this guy talks, I listen. When we took over Dietz Mechanical, we had 22 reviews in 22 years. In 7 short months, we went from 22 reviews to 107. We went from a 4.2 to a 4.7. We tripled our Facebook presence and we tripled our calls. If you're an HVAC, plumbing, electric, landscaping company, and you're looking for a no BS approach to marketing, you're looking for people who have done it before, you got to go to LeadHub.net. You and I both cut our teeth in the restaurant business and the hotel business, and I would be lying if I didn't say that I miss aspects of it, right?
Yep.
I tell people all the time, my quote for life is, I don't like the beach, but I really enjoy people at the beach because they're in a good mood, right?
Yeah.
And when you frequent a place or you work where you cut your teeth, where people are excited, the food's good, the experience is good, they're excited, right? And you know, you and I both cut our teeth at many restaurants, but Hotel Emma, and it was just a cool place. I want to say I just saw like a week ago, like Adam Sandler stayed there for his show.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like that's the place to be, man.
And we, the funny thing is, we had no, or I did, and I was oblivious. I think I was around 24, 25. I had no idea the scale of what Hotel Emma was, because, and I learned a lot through leadership there too, is because she would take me to meetings that I had no business being in, right? Mm-hmm. Mostly because you knew I was going to take notes for them, you know what I mean? And ask them questions. The leadership there never made you feel as if you're working in what was going to be a world renowned hotel. And I think it showed up in the quality of service that we had right when we opened, right? It was, I think it was still that boutique style where we were still very friendly and there was no put on, you know? And I think we were able to be very authentic and to watch that place grow and soar and just know that I was a part of the team that helped open it, right? However small that is I wear that with a badge of honor. I look for any excuse to bring that up in a conversation because that's how proud I am of it.
I remember I was in a bar in Chicago for a work trip, and it was a really busy bar, and it was like on this rooftop, and I'm literally sitting to a guy in New York and a guy from Chicago, and he goes, man, I just went to San Antonio last week, and if you haven't been to Hotel Emma, you got to go. And I was like, no shit. I was like, that's when it was like, you realize like it was getting out there. So we had to jump into that story, guys. But Maddie, tell everybody a little bit about your history, who you are and what you do, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah. So, you know, Maddie Marshall, grew up Matthew Marshall. Uncle gave me the nickname Maddie when I think it was in first grade, and it just stuck. Like I said, from North Louisiana, met my wife here. First job was actually in the service industry. I was a dishwasher. Ended up making my way to delivery driver because delivery driver quit and nobody else had a car. Worked my way up to bartender, waited tables, fine dining, worked in banquets, worked as a concierge for a while. Loved it, and then ended up having an opportunity to get into the home services business, which I thought was a far cry from what I was doing in the service industry. But the more and more I cut my teeth there, the more I realized I can apply a lot of the principles that I learned and have been going through since I was 17 years old into what I do today to create an authentic experience. And so now, I own Wright Services, Wright AC Services down in San Antonio. I worked alongside some big conglomerates on the HVAC side, plumbing side. Also worked at Champion AC down in San Antonio as we scaled that business from about 6 to 15. And so, you know, relatively young, worked as a marketing director, assistant general manager, outreach manager, customer service manager. So really, I like to really provide clients with a unique client experience. I think that's how we will position ourselves at Wright Services to the future in San Antonio is by providing a unique experience.
I'm on this new kick right now, and I was talking to my coaching clients today. I feel like most people, right? We, especially back in the day, we were a society of identities and labels, right? And so I'm, you know, for instance, I'm a teacher and that's all I do. And I provide no value outside of that if I want to move into a different sector, right? I work in hospitality or hotels and I provide no, you know, value outside of that. I think a lot of people get stuck in that. But mm-hmm. I think you and I both see as you farther get down business, like it's really just about people at its core, all of it, no matter what business you're in.
Yeah. And treating people the right way. I mean, we have a line here at Wright where we just want to be easy to work with. And being easy to work with doesn't mean that we're going to get stepped on. Doesn't mean that we're the cheapest. Doesn't mean that we're the most expensive. But when you call in, what we're trying to craft is not giving people a reason, you know, and really, truly living out being easy to work with. You know, it doesn't mean you get to skip to the front of the line because, you know, you're pushing and pulling. It's just creating processes to where when people do business with the right services, I want them to go, man, that was one of the most easy experiences I've ever had. I just bought a box truck and the gentleman made it so easy for me. I mean, and we've all bought cars before. I've had to go up to the shop with, you know, the binder full of documents and a business card and all this. The guy just said, I'm going to make it so simple for you. All I ask is a check for your down payment when you come pick up the truck. That's all I need. Mm-hmm. And I looked at it afterwards and I told our GM, I said, that's what we need. That mm-hmm. was so easy that if I can, I will buy every single van in my fleet from that gentleman.
There's a guy, and you know, because you talk to him and you're helping him out, Zach. Zach knew that I was super busy. Zach works for us. And he was selling Verizon iPads and phones at the time. And he said, here's what I'm going to do. He said, how many you need? I said, I need five. I need five phones. I need this case. I need that thing. He goes, here's the deal. I'm going to set them all up for you. You're going to walk in. He goes, you're going to swipe your credit card and you're going to walk out. And he did that for me like three different times because typically you're in a Verizon store for 2-3 hours. I was like, I don't got time for that. And so I'd be like, when can you do it? He's like, well, we're going to slow down in the afternoon. He's like, I'll have it all set up. Give me 2 hours. Boom. And I'm like, dude, I'll buy from you over and over and over again.
Absolutely. You know, I think the client path has changed, especially in home services. And we still feel it every once in a while of, you know, people trying to, well, they just kind of want to haggle with you or get the price down because that's kind of been the industry at large. And what we found is you create that unique client experience. They're going to say, really, it's only that much? And I'm sure you're thinking the same thing with Zach is, that's all I have to pay you for all this? Yeah, let's mm-hmm. keep doing it. Let's go. Mm-hmm. You know, we have that responsibility. And I think as, you know, in the home services industry, we have a very hard time kind of rewriting the past. I think there are a lot of bad seeds out there and we still feel the effects of it today. But if we all come together and change that perception, it's only going to get harder, in my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we've created an experience where everybody can study before the thing now, right? You can't hide it anymore. Like, nope. This is what the company is. This is what we offer. I think the complexity that people offer in their sales process is for them, not for the customer.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And if you can say, you know, what I tell everybody is, when's the last time as an owner or GM of your business, have you experienced your company? Have you experienced your company? Not like worked for your company. Like you got on the phone. Hey, that's really weird. That shouldn't work. Mm-hmm. Like when's the last time you did that as a business owner? I would venture to guess it's been a while.
Yeah, that's a fantastic part because, you know, we had the same thing when one of the owners I used to work for, he used to just all in the call centers. They're not doing enough. They're not doing enough. You know, because there's a lot of downtime and you're, mm-hmm. you're trying to figure out how to make them, you know, you're trying to optimize time, right? Mm-hmm. So finally, I just had to pull him aside. I was like, just call our two biggest competitors and listen to them. And then I want you to call in and listen to us. And I'm not saying that we don't have our faults and we don't have things to work on, but exactly what you said, go experience another company and then come experience yours too. Cause I think it helps kind of calm some of those nerves as well. Like, you know what? We do have a ways to go, but we're a lot better than our next competitor. Mm-hmm.
I think that goals and everything is great, but it's something I said to the guys the other day, if intention is your driver, right? The intention is that all of us in this room together are growing. We have no egos. We want to get better. Then we're headed in the right direction. If you're fighting decisions, if you're not looking at the core, look, your reviews say what they say. If they're bad, then you got problems, right? Mm-hmm. If I tell everybody all the time, do you know how hard it is to sell crappy food? Do you know how hard it is as a bartender or waiter to sell that crap? Like, it's impossible. But when your food is badass, to some of the restaurants, the fucking smoked quail at Hotel Emma's restaurant, I mean, I could sell 10 of those to a table, right? Mm-hmm. Like, my parents came in town. That's what they were eating. Easy day. Yeah. Easy day, right? The breakfast was great. Like, you know you're getting food, right? Like, that's all day. Right. And so the question that you have to ask yourself as a business owner is like, is your product good enough? Like, and if you're trying to sell something that's not good enough, the start to finish product, well, it's going to be really hard to sell no matter who's good at selling it.
Yeah. And we go back and forth on that because technicians they always come back with why they didn't. Right. Well, I didn't sell because, so-and-so can do it for cheaper or so-and-so can do it for this. And it's not a race to the bottom. Right. It's on us to provide the value. We know we have better equipment than X company. We know we have a better install. We know we have a better warranty, right? It's on us to, like you said, you got to be excited about your product. You know, a burger's a burger, right? But I had one in the fine dining that cost $18 that I could, hey, it's made with biscuit and we got caramelized onions. I can't sell that same thing at McDonald's, right? Mm-hmm. But it's sustenance, you know, and there's a little bit more flair to one, but the product's similar. And, you know, we have, like you said, build the sales process to where it's just easy, right? We're not talking about airflow and what it can do and the ins and outs. Like, how does this make your life easier, right? Mm-hmm. My equipment comes with a 10-year parts and labor warranty. If something breaks, you don't pay a dime. And so while it may seem a little bit expensive over the course of 10 years, your HVAC, you're paying a one-time cost for it, you know? Mm-hmm. And over 10 years, you're not going to pay another cent as long as we maintain it. So that peace of mind, that worry just goes right out the window.
Well, that's the cost that nobody talks about is worrying about it. Like my head is like a filing cabinet. If you're a worry for me, then, or if I have to worry about it, then we're going to, like, here's a perfect example. I literally know nothing about cars, like not a thing. Like, you put a key in it and you go, like, that's mm-hmm. the extent. My grandfather used to rebuild cars. That's not me. So I'm not going to go into a Discount Tire and tell them what they should do. So when I go in or I buy a car, they have an issue with me. They're like, wait, this is like too easy. And I'm like, well, do you sell cars for a living? Now, granted, this hasn't always won me a great car, and I digress. But that's one of those scenarios where, like, take a technician. We have a technician who used to be build cars and mechanic for 15 years. He should probably be the one to go buy cars.
Yeah.
Like, he's the expert. Like, don't send me anymore. Like, when you find the car that you need, right? But we, mm-hmm. but what's happened is we've everything's available, right? With social media and AI, and we've gotten away from the specialist. We've gotten away mm-hmm. from understanding the intricacies. I have a buddy that can eat dirt and tell you what wine they grow into it.
Ooh.
And he works at a supper club where senators go to, like. Yeah. But he's taken 25 years. He taught me what wine was, how to sell mm-hmm. it. He's paid really well because he knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah. It's the 10,000 hour rule? Like, you're not an expert in something until you've sacrificed 10,000 of your hours. And you're right. We've gotten, you know, especially in the marketing space, cause that's kind of one of the first jobs that I held for a home service company. Is it's gotten further and further away from just put an ad in the yellow pages and make sure your name has 1A or 2A's or 3A's at the top so you're first in the phone book. It's morphed. And so marketers, I think, are kind of undersold, especially from like a content creation side or a PPC specialist side. You don't want just one person handling everything mm-hmm. because there's too much to go learn. That landscape is constantly changing. Look at where we are just in a year with the adoption of AI. And as a business owner, you don't have time to go learn every single prompt that you need, but you know it can make life easier, right? And like you said with Zach, just go have a specialist. It may hurt the bottom line for this year, but the opportunity for you 2, 3, 4 years from now and what they uncover and how much easier they make your life, I believe is worth the investment.
Like something I found out through dealing with the chamber, like the chamber has a person on staff, the Chamber of Commerce has a person on staff that specializes in finding grants. Like, do you know how hard it is to like find grants and like apply for them? She enjoys that. If you asked me to do that, I would do anything else, like literally anything else. I would, I'd mow grass till the cows come home. I'd build bricks. I don't care. No, thank you. She loves it. She loves it. That makes everybody in that business better.
Yep. Yep. And it's unsung heroes. And it's doing the work that nobody wants to do. And I'm, you know, coming back to the service industry, that's how you grew. It wasn't, there was no seniority. It wasn't like, okay, you've been a server for 10 years. You automatically get to be the next manager, right? Mm-hmm. You had to do the little things that made your GM's life easier, your executive chef's life easier. And you kind of had to do some of the dirty work. And like you said, you find joy in doing those things, right? I never thought in a million years that I would like and enjoy listening to phone calls, right? But you learn, like you said, you learn so much about your business and about your employees, and you can follow that call all the way through. So they knock the call out, right? Okay. And then we sold it, right? So how can I repeat that process? I love that. And I love it so much. And you can have it in a, you know, everybody loves booking right now. I get that. It's math. You can draw back. What we look for is we have a call center scorecard. And it's all things that pertain to if you communicate with empathy, if you do things, if you answer the questions with confidence, if you put in the data right, you've done your job, right? Mm-hmm. Them booking or not booking in San Antonio in the heat, I can't do anything about us being booked 3 weeks out. I'm not going to let that deter the call center or make an impact on their bonus. I'm going to go right to the call center scorecard and said, hey, 95, you know, how we need more technicians, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Instead of coming down to my call center,
I was listening to a human. This guy's an expert in human actions and watching body language. And he was talking about when he trains top CEOs, he said the problem with speaking training is that you're looking at the guy and you're saying, you know, you should have done this there, put your hand there. He goes, what they're not doing is he says, they don't have, he says, we have a camera on the speaker, but we have a camera on the audience. And so we're watching where the audience resonates with a movement or a speech that he says, like a comedian. Comedian knows that was funny, that was not funny. He goes, the problem is you're only looking at things one way and you're fixing the person. You're not seeing the feedback, the results out. And I thought that was genius.
I love that. I'm going to have you write that down for me.
Dude, I got to send you that podcast episode.
Please.
Dude, it was so crazy because it was like so simple. He was like, oh, yeah, we just started filming the audience too.
Yeah. I mean, you hit the nail on the head. And I know you and I always come back to the service industry. But if you take it down to your point, like we in home services, we overcomplicate things. Mm-hmm. I always felt the best restaurants that I worked in, it was easy. You put the order in, we bring it down. It doesn't have to be anything more than that. But like you said, the more and more you complicate it, the more and more people get frustrated and you never get good feedback ever.
Yeah. Dude, I worked at, I hope nobody, one of my previous owners, I worked at, I have no problem saying this. Timing is everything. Are you familiar with like Clark's and Perla's and all that stuff in Austin? Do you know
no.
The company? Okay. So there's a company, Clark's, Lambert's. They own many restaurants. Now they own hotels, Elizabeth Street Cafe. I worked at Perla's before Austin, like it was in the process of booming, but then over the next 4 years, it like, holy crap, right? It like really went crazy. I have no problem saying this because I've said it. The owners are douchebags. I'm just being completely honest. I'm not a fan of them. I have not worked there in many, many years, so I can say that thing. But let me tell you something right now. They were so tapped into the aesthetic of Austin, Texas, and what those people wanted. They traveled a bunch. They even opened up one of these in Aspen. I'm telling you right now, Clark's Restaurant is my favorite restaurant I've ever been in the entire world. Look, it's small, maybe 15 seats, but the bar, the oyster bar is right there. Mm-hmm. Big old windows. Perla's was a different beast. We used to do $60,000 to $80,000 Saturdays, dude. We were, dude, I was working 4 days a week, bringing in like $12,000 a month, dude. Like just, I mean, just wrecking, bro. Huh? But here's the thing. The food was good. Don't get me wrong. Flew in oysters every day. But it was on South Congress, open patio, beach vibe, great cocktails. It was a place to be seen. It was the place to be seen on a Saturday. There was always something going on. We didn't need good food, but because we had good food, we took it to a whole nother level, right?
Absolutely.
And so the attention to detail, what they wore, like what we put down, everything mattered, right? And and that's where you need to be in your business. The problem is that what I try to tell my team, and I think we do it all the time, we get caught up in the things that honestly matter but don't matter, right? Mm-hmm. If we are not answering the phone call and we are not closing the sale and we are not asking for the review and we are not collecting the money, what are we doing? Those are the ways the business continues to work. But we get so distracted in all these little... Look, you need good HR policies. You need insurance. You need all that stuff. But there's a time and place for all that stuff. Because if you're not doing the basics, then you're just going to be caught out.
It doesn't matter. You know, if you don't know your pricing, I mean, that's something that I found working with a lot of companies is you're just underpriced. There's nothing broken outside of your pricing. You have everything else, but you're right. It's the 80-20 rule. And, you know, we go through it really every week. There's something that's brought up in our manager's meeting because we have a frustrations list where it's we have our priorities. Anything else that's frustrating, you put it on the list. You know, and if it's still frustrating you in a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks, let's talk about it. But we get so focused on trying to tweak a checklist or, like you said, trying to, you know, hammer home, hey, you got to take pictures on the job and things like that, where we're getting away from the basics, which is exactly what you said. Create a fan on the phone. Show up when you say you're going to be there in a uniform and a hat and groomed, right? Because you're trying to sell anywhere between $8,000 and $20,000 equipment from residential side. Be there on the install and collect the money. Those are the four steps, you know? The checklist or, they didn't include this, or we didn't include that. Why are we spending time on it? Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. We need to spend time on the stuff that matters. And once that's fulfilled, let's go back to the other stuff.
Let's take it to the next level. And let's say on a personal level, right? Not even the company. Mm-hmm. That's we get distracted too.
Oh yeah.
Basics. Wake up, read a little bit, put something positive in your thing, eat decent, do a little workout and drink some water. Like I swear to God, like I've been saying the same thing for like 7 years straight and everybody's like, what's the secret? And I'm like, the basics.
Yeah. Take care of yourself. You know, I was fortunate enough to work with a gentleman who used to always tell me, and I'm going to get the analogy wrong and he always corrects me on it, but it's, I'd rather you sharpen your axe for 7 hours and spend 1 hour cutting down the tree than sitting there hacking at the tree for 8 hours. And so what that told me coming out of the service industry was, hey, Maddie, you don't have to be busy. In the service industry, we're busy constantly. The lights go off and we're done and we can, you know, we'll go back home and think about the ranch that we forgot to deliver or some, you know, we charged the lady for an extra Jack and Coke and we shouldn't have. But the lights are turned off, the tables are clean, the place is clean, it's done. Where in the home services industry, the work's never done. So for me, I used to get so wrapped up in, I got to prove my worth. Where what he was telling me is like, go take care of yourself. I'm paying you for your mind and your ideas and your execution. I'm not paying you for grunt work. I don't care about the amount of calls that you listen to or how many review links you sent out that day. I'm paying you for the process. I want you to go to learn it and to need it. And, you know, if that's kind of like you're saying, that's my piece of advice. Take care of yourself. You know, there's no need to work 14, 16 hour days every day in your career. There's a time and a place for that, that calls for that. But you're missing out on so much other stuff and enjoying life if you're working and grinding that hard. I always felt.
Everybody says they have it licked, right? Or they have it, you know, I got it. I'm dialed in. Okay, take your week and now execute it in 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Okay. So this is a real story for me. 2 years ago, something happened where I coach on one day and I run my other businesses. And like, I didn't want to have like Friday meetings anymore. Like, I just don't like Friday. It's my thing. I play golf, meet with investors, catch up on the week. And I was like, you know, I can't do that. And then I was like, Yeah, you can. And so I just don't do it anymore. And you know what? I sat and fretted about that for like 2 years, and it was like really simple.
Yeah. I mean, it. I love the fact that we're at least starting the conversation of a 4-day work week, mm-hmm. right? We've implemented in the off season. We do 4-on-3 off, okay. right? We rotate our technicians. If the day calls for 10 hours, it's there. If it doesn't call for it, hey, we're good. You still get a longer weekend. Mm-hmm. They enjoy that. Now there are times when, you know, like, hey, can I pick up an extra day? Mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. That's fine. It's time. They want that time. You know, yeah. having a, like you said, a technician having a Friday off.
Oh my God.
They love that.
Dude, I have no idea how, I have no idea how humans, and I'm being honest because I don't have kids, guys. Anybody that is a mom or dad that works, that has more than, just has one kid. Mm-hmm. How do you do anything? I have no idea. How do you go to the store? How do you go to the bank? How do you do mm-hmm. anything? I have no idea. I am a person that doesn't have kids. And I still have trouble fitting it all in.
Yeah. I think, you know, technology's made it to where we can get a lot done, right? And it's not in the time. I think we get, you know, well, if I'm not busy for this 30 minutes, am I really providing value? And I always like go find something you want to go work on, right? And just know if your priority comes through, which is, you know, in my field, it was always, hey, the phone call comes in, stop, take the phone call, right? Mm-hmm. But be present. Right. I don't want people to ever fear coming into work or fret coming into work. We all have days where we don't want to do it. Right. But we have a question that we ask on the screening process that I got from my old owner, which was what don't you like to do? I know that you like to do this because you applied for this position, but what about this position don't you like to do? And you really learn a lot about somebody through that. So if, you know, if Austin's off or if Austin's trying to get hours, and all I have is stuff that he hates doing, I'm just going to tell him, hey, buddy, I have hours for you, but you may hate doing it. Or if I have a project and I need some extra hands, and even though Austin's a technician, but he tells me he actually likes data entry, hey, man, do you want to come earn some extra hours? I got to put in all these invoices into the spreadsheet, mm-hmm. right? And just make them, okay, well, hey, at least I feel heard. You know, mm-hmm. I used to hear a lot of that at different companies. I just don't feel like I'm being heard.
Sure.
I think that's something as business owners or GMs or leaders that we should never hear, right? Whether we can do something about it or coach, that's on us. But I never want any of my employees to look at me and say, I don't feel like you really heard me. That's a mm-hmm. shot. You know what I mean? That cuts deep. That hurts.
Because I think that at the core of everything is what we're searching for. Mm-hmm. Is that 9 times out of 10, we are just not feeling heard or seen. Doesn't mean we're going to take your ideas, but just to say, hey, I hear you. Like that's mm-hmm. enough, you know, as a thing. My employees have, you know, they can come in and tell me what's going on in their personal life. And I'm mm-hmm. going to listen. Doesn't mean I'm going to fix it, but it means that, you know, I'm here and I understand. And hey, if you need to cut out early because you're dealing with this thing, like I get it. Like I don't ever... What I don't want anybody to do is I think that the bigger issue revolves around one of my favorite shit of all time. Ed Mylett and Aubrey Marcus were on a podcast and he goes, the problem that we have in society is that people don't realize that everything in life is a choice. And he said, hear me out. He said, you could not eat and you would die, but that's still your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And
we
behave as if everything we have to do, we have to do it, and you don't have to do anything.
I mean, there's a book, and to kind of expand on that idea or thought, was a book called Level Up. And what he talks about is we're only born with two fears. Everything else is a learned fear. We're only born with the fear of heights or falling, right? Or the fear of loud noises, because that's primitive in us, right? That was what we knew. Loud noises meant predators, and we're off cliffs, and I'm sure everybody's seen or can look up the video of babies, you know, parents are on the other side of the room, they'll crawl to them and then they make it look like an optical illusion and they'll stop at, you know, 6 months, 7 months. So it's innate. Everything else is learned. And I've heard it before from so many people is I was so fearful to do that. But once I did it, it was fine. Yes, because what you live, the fear is always worse than the actual work or the present or the job. And as soon as, like you said, you can tap into your mentality and know, like, this is up here. It's my learned fear. It's not something I've experienced. Yeah. You know, you can really push through it.
I heard a quote this morning on a podcast that the owner of Starwood Hotels, only 120 bill under management, no big deal.
None.
He said that a job of a leader is to absorb the uncertainty and press on.
I like that.
Right?
I like that. Yeah.
Because it is the truth, right? Because you as job as an owner or CEO, your job is to protect your team. I'm not saying it's right, but I have some people in my office who are learning to be on the phones with people, and I tell them it's never your job to argue with an angry person. That's my job. You never have to be put in a position that you're uncomfortable with, because that's why I'm here. I'm the stopgap. And that freedom that they have to know they don't have to address that. Hey, no, let me let you talk to Austin or Ryan.
Yeah.
Like, that's a freedom in their job that I don't imagine they've had other places.
No, because it's always de-escalate, because people in leadership always, I don't say want it easy, but they want the outcome before they reach that call. And I love that you say, just escalate it to me. Mm-hmm. Right? Our frontline people, especially people in customer service, it's a tough job. Mm-hmm. Right? And the best, you know, coming back to service, I had a gentleman, we'll call him Matt, right? He was the floor manager at a fine dining restaurant I worked down here. I watched that guy, the coolest thing, at my first day, dishwasher quits. This dude's in a suit, takes his jacket off, and is going to wash dishes because he knows without dishes, the whole place can't run. That was my first, like, I'll run through a wall for you, right? Mm-hmm. And then I had another group, and they were splitting the burger four ways and, you know, waters only, and they're running me all around. And he finally looked at me, said, are they giving you trouble? I was like, yeah, man, they kind of talked to me a certain way. And he went over to him and he goes, I'm going to pay your tab, but I'm going to kindly ask you. And I felt heard, seen, but exactly, he knew it was going to escalate to him anyway. And he just got out in front of it. And like I said, I was like, you call me whenever you need me. I'm here for you. I only want to work when you're managing the floor. But as leaders, it's these small moments that, you know, like you said, your frontline people don't get to experience because they've been beaten down so long, and they'll run through a wall for you over things that you might find minute when they just don't, they're not equipped to deal with it. That's like you said, that's why we're here.
So I'm going to give you a minute. I'm going to tell my story first so you can think before we get out of here. I want you to think of one of your crazy, because some waiter bartender stories I can't share. I got too many to go from, and I was like, where should I go? Like, waiting on the Spurs owner. Like, I got crazy ones where I used to leave in the middle of waiting on a table and go pick up cigars. Somebody would watch my table, and I mean, I've done so many. Like, oh, that's a good one. I should tell that one. Okay, man, I'm gonna tell two. Okay, so we had this Christmas party at this very high end steakhouse I worked at. And you had to spend the minimum, right? So the party was 20. The minimum was very high. It was like literally Christmas Eve. The minimum was very high, and it was like 20 people. And then it was going to be like 16 people. And then it was going to be like 11 people. And then finally it was like 8 people. Like, all these people couldn't go. And I'm like, there's no way they're going to hit their minimum. And the first people showed up, and they go, oh, just wait till the CEO's husband gets here. It'll be fine. And I'm like, what do you mean? They go, just wait. So all of a sudden a Ferrari drives up, and I'm like, oh, guaranteed it's him.
Yeah.
He walks in, whips open the menu, and goes, what's the most expensive bottle of wine you have? He goes, I want that one, and order me 6 more. And he goes, this music is dog shit. He goes, what do you got to get the party going? He goes, I love Michael Jackson. So the sommelier is obsessed with Michael Jackson. He has a Michael Jackson bling jacket on. He goes and gets it, and he dances like 3 songs. The guy's just like throwing hundreds out.
Oh, that's incredible.
We danced on the table. We danced on the table with the team. We're waiting on them. And then after he was drunk, he was like, okay, just order me the $30 bottles of wine. Fuck all that expensive shit. But he hit the thing, and it was crazy. Now, the craziest thing that happened to me is I tried to buy a house for 7 years, my first house. Long story, many different reasons. The day prior, I had a deal fall through like a couple weeks prior. And like the agent at the time, he's like, hey, man, like, you need to get your shit together. Like, this is what he says to me. Like, maybe you should wait a couple years to buy a house. Like, I was livid. I was like, dude, like, get out of here. Mm-hmm. So I was like so frustrated. Well, I waited on this couple, and it's their anniversary. And this guy's like my age, and he's slamming back like old fashions, and he's feeling pretty good. And he was like, "What are you doing here?" And I'm like, "Well, this happened." I tell him this whole story, right? Like, he goes, "Well, funny enough, I'm a real estate agent, and I know a mortgage broker who specializes with bartenders." He's like, "Call this number." He's like, "Call this number, blah, blah, blah." So I call the number. I get pre-approved 2 days later. We find a house 4 days later, and we bought the house. I bought two other houses with that guy. I went to Portugal with that guy and his wife. We're still friends now. And he like started my real estate career because he wouldn't take no for an answer. Like, that's what happens. Just crazy yes. restaurant stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I'll have a horror story first and then I'll just kind of speak. So my like, hey, I'm in the right place was, you know, I was working in banquets and we did meat pies. So essentially it's Louisiana style empanada with ground beef in it. There's a red sauce that comes with it. Right. It's like a tomato basil ish spicy. So I'm coming out and now this is on me. Right. I want to be very clear. But as it came out, usually you put a coaster underneath the stob so it wouldn't slide all over the table because the stob was hot. Right. There's no coaster. And I'm waiting. We're doing a dinner reception for a wedding. And man, I come flying because, you know, hey, we're trying to get in and out. I come flying right out of the double doors. They bust open. I watch it like everybody says, it's in slow motion. I watch it go all the way up and all the way down. Luckily, I caught the actual stob that it was in. And I just watch all of this red sauce go right on top of the flower girl's dress. I'm horrified. I'm absolutely horrified. Not only is it on me, it's on her. We're in white coats and ties. And I just like, there's a place in the back. I hand it off to the captain. I'm like, hey, man, I got to take a break. I'm like sitting down. I'm just like, I'm despondent. I'm like, how am I going to talk to the family? I got to own up to it. The bride comes back there. She watches the whole thing happen. She comes back there and she goes, she's been acting. It's her little sister. She's been acting like a bitch all day. I'm glad you just put her in her place. And I, to this day, don't know if that was the case or if this is just the world's sweetest bride. Right. And I come back and I apologize and, you know, everything's cool. But that was just my moment of like, hey, not everything's as bad as you think it is. And the second one I have is just, you never, like you said, you never know who you're going to meet or who you're going to work with. Two people that I worked in banquets with at Luke, one of them is now running some of the day-to-day operations for the Southerly Restaurant Group. We worked together, slummed it together, right? Making pennies. Mm-hmm. The other one is I'd almost say world renowned and one of the big bartenders here in San Antonio, operates Pastiche, has a couple of others, come up with a lot of different menus. He couldn't get a bartender shift at the place we worked and he grinded. And like I said, you never know who you're going to meet here and you never know who's going to grow with you. And you look back and I'm so proud of the moments that I had there and the people that I met, because I can just tell you, I would not be in this seat today without those two's, their support and their faith. And then also the people I worked with and just grinded it out with. You learn how to work within a team in those environments, and I wouldn't change it for anything.
I tell everybody, be careful who you talk to, because you don't know who the next Zuckerberg is. You know, like I tell you what's crazy, man. I had a guy I worked with 15 years ago. We just coached for like 6 months. Like, he knew me like back, like we hadn't talked in like 10 years. It's just crazy, man. Like, you just never know. Like, there's still one guy, my first mentor ever was a bartender, and we reconnected recently, and he's a pastor now, and he owns a couple companies, and, you know, it's just, just a wild. As I say, the restaurant business, only a fisherman sees another fisherman from afar.
Yeah. And I always come back to the relationships, like being able to go places and see people and, you know, then now they're in positions to take care of you and they go, I haven't seen you in so long. And they just, I'm like, I'm not here for, okay. Yeah. Come on, bring it on.
I got to tell you a story. I was in Brooklyn, my first time in New York, and of course Bourdain, I only go where Bourdain goes. Mm-hmm. And so I go to this place that's like, you can't get a reservation, very hard. They had like, French restaurant with like really choice whiskey, but like there was a whiskey bottle that no customer orders ever, mm-hmm. like ever. I ordered it, and this was like, when I say like top, this was like bartender served 12 people, had two assistants, like that kind of place. I ordered it. All three of them looked around and go, yeah, you're a bartender. And I was like, yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Like, it was just so cool because there's like this whole like code. There's this like different world, you know?
Yeah. I loved it. And, I'd recommend anybody just spend a summer there, you know, mm-hmm. especially if you're growing up or you have kids. Like, you learn how to talk to people and you learn how to work with people who are not from your environment and not in your bubble. And mm-hmm. really, it helps expand your brain and how you view the world.
Totally. If people want to reach out to you, they want to talk to you, how would they do that?
Email me, maddie@writeac.com, writeht.com. Or, you know, I think you're going to put the link down there for my LinkedIn page. Feel free. I'm very respondent in those channels.
Awesome. Guys, if you got some value from this, I want you to send it out to a friend, share us, rate us and review us, and we'll see you next time, guys.